What's up, Bandhive crew? James here. And before we jump into this episode, I wanted to ask you a question. Have you ever wished there was a way to connect with me as well as other listeners in real time? I have the solution. I finally got around to making a Bandhive Discord server, which is people have been asking me for years and I just wasn't listening. I wish I had done this sooner because I couldn't be happier with the results. It's been fantastic. And we would love to see you join us. We have discussions about the music business, gear, the podcast, and a general channel as well. You can join the discussion now by visiting bandhive.rocks/discord. Again, that is bandhive.rocks/discord. Welcome to episode 64 of the Bandhive Podcast.
You're listening to the Bandhive Podcast, the number one online resource for DIY bands to learn about the music business and touring. If you want to turn your band into a lean, mean touring machine, you're in the right place. Now, let's get this show on the road.
It is time for another episode of the Bandhive Podcast. My name is James Cross, and I'm here with Matt Hose of Alive in Barcelona. How are you doing today, Matt?
I'm doing pretty awesome, James. How's everything going over there for you?
That's great to hear. And over here, I honestly can't complain. I know months ago, we talked about a 737 speaker that I had purchased for like $10. Well, as of yesterday, I finished putting that speaker into a handmade wooden box and took apart, or rather gutted, a Google Home Mini and hooked up the Google Home Mini's circuit board to the speaker. So now I have a 737 speaker that works by saying like, "Hey Google, play whatever."
That's awesome.
Dude, I am so stoked. It's actually a gift for a friend of mine, but I have a second speaker, so I'm going to build another one for myself too. It took me way longer than it should have to build this thing because it's Vermont and it's wicked cold outside. So like doing any woodwork out in the garage, you can only do it for like 20 or 30 minutes before your hands get numb.
Right.
But I'm going to wait on the next project, the one I build for myself, till it warms up. So then I can just like finish it in a week instead of 2 months.
Yeah, that sounds awesome, though. I'm like super jealous. Now I want one.
I'll have to find another speaker and build another one.
Don't tempt me. I'll mount it up here in the corner. It'll be great.
That might be tough because the Google Home's on top. You got to put it on like a bookshelf or something. Or you could build a shelf and put it up on a shelf in the corner. That would do the trick.
Just mount it to my desk that I built.
Exactly. So yeah, that's what's new here, and I'm really excited about that, and it's a very, very late Christmas present. Today's Sunday the 24th, so it's going to go out tomorrow on exactly 1 month after Christmas.
Hey, better late than never.
This is true. I was like, oh, I can build this in 2 weeks. 2 months later.
Honestly, it's amazing that the two pieces didn't just, you know, sit on opposite sides of the room. The fact that you got it done is impressive.
Yeah, it was a fun project. I wish I could have gutted an Alexa, but the problem with that is on an Alexa or an Echo Mini, as they're called, the speaker is like soldered to the circuit board, whereas on the Google Home Mini, there's actually wires from the circuit board to the speaker, so I could cut the wires and solder a different speaker onto it.
Okay.
So even though I'm an Amazon guy, I had to use the Google Home Mini, but it was so worth it. And yeah, if anybody wants to check that out, it's on my Instagram at MadRockXEX. I posted a video of it, so it's out there. But enough about me nerding out about old plane parts. This one was built in 1995. Sorry, I said I was going to stop nerding out. Today, we are here to talk about the most non-nerdiest thing ever. And that is about types of venues that you need to know about when you're booking your first tour, because back in episode 61, which was "Now is the time to start planning your post-pandemic tours," we talked about booking your tours or planning your tours, and we briefly touched on different types of venues, but we didn't go into detail about what each of those venues has or doesn't have. And we also realized that if you're going to book your first tour, you need to know who you can expect to be working with at these venues. So we're going to go through and give you a little bit of background information on four different types of venues that a DIY band who's just starting out can expect to play. And then we're going to talk about roles that should be at those venues. Maybe they're combined, maybe they're not, or maybe the venue just does everything DIY and has no idea what they're doing. So you kind of have to figure out what role each person plays, or if there's one person that's easy, you know, they do everything. to get us started, Matt, do you want to go through the four types of venues we're going to cover today and tell us a little bit about each one?
I would love to. So throughout your career, you're going to play a whole bunch of different shapes, sizes, venues. Some of them are going to be incredible. Some of them are going to be like awful. And some of them will leave such a stain on your mind that you will never forget them. And that's just the nature of the industry that we're in. So you have small clubs. You know, these are generally, you know, some of the more well-planned shows. These are generally, you know, you're going to be working with promoters or talent buyers, production managers. You know, small clubs, they host a lot of shows. So they know what they're doing a little bit better. You have bars, which also host shows, but they may not have the in-house staff to really facilitate all, you know, everything that you need. Sometimes there's a sound guy, sometimes there's not. Sometimes, you know, you go play a bar and they've got the whole nine yards, you know, roadies, production managers, stage managers, like you name it. So it really just depends on the size of the bar and how frequently they have live music. We also have coffee houses. You know, coffee houses are really cool because they have a hidden power behind them that we'll get to a little bit later. And then we also have the infamous and elusive house show or the basement show. We've all played, you know, a couple of those before. And, you know, generally these types of shows, you're going to be dealing with like some kid in a small town who, you know, is tired of hanging out at Walmart with his friends. And so he decided last year that he was going to start throwing shows in his basement. And, you know, those are some of the ones. House shows will stick in your mind very, very well for two reasons. One, because they will be incredible. And two, because they will also be awful. So it's a very wide spectrum with the house show, but I can both tell you that the best show and the worst show that I've ever played were both in a house. So, you know, we'll get to that a little bit later, but those are the four main venue styles that you'll be working with early on in your career. Later on, you know, you'll get to more marquees and theaters and grand halls and amphitheaters and stuff like that. But, you know, for right now, this is kind of the early, this is your taking off point. This is like, if you are doing everything, you don't have booking agents, these are going to be the venues you're working with, and you're going to be working with people inside of each one of these situations.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, since you mentioned house shows, that gave me a memory. There was a place called Gandhi Lot down in somewhere in suburbia of Massachusetts. And I remember there was one show there. It was my friend's band's farewell tour. And they were doing like three shows in New England as this quote unquote farewell tour. And a bunch of us were in this kid's kitchen, just standing there. And all of a sudden, we hear this giant crack. And this is like an old 1800s farmhouse. So like everything in the house is ancient. And there's probably like 10 or 12 of us. And we're like, that sounded like the floor is cracking. And we never figured out what it was. But for the rest of the evening, we were all more or less avoiding the kitchen because we were pretty sure one of the beams had cracked under the floor. Because there were too many of us in that room. It was too heavy. So that was a fun house show story that I would not like to relive because I don't want to end up in a haunted farmhouse basement. That was...
Where's your sense of adventure?
Oh, I would love to go down the steps and go into the haunted farmhouse basement. I would not want to drop in on a ghost. I don't think they would appreciate it.
What if it was the ghost of you?
Was that a bad band pun that I'm not getting?
Oh, of course it was. That's an MCR song.
Oh, man. You missed a really good one, though.
I didn't. I didn't want to interrupt you. I missed a couple of good ones. I was just being modest.
The ghost inside, man. Come on, Matt. The ghost inside.
See, that's like a little bit later than me. See, I make the My Chemical Romance reference because, let's see, how old are you, James?
I am 27.
Yeah, see, so I'm 31 and I have older brothers. So like I got all the... You know, I get the Blink-182 references, the Sum 41s, the Green Days, you know, the Jimmy Eat World. I get those references.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, I have to say, you were on Warped Tour when The Ghost Inside was, so you can make all the excuses you want about being an old guy, but you were there.
There's also 50 million other bands I was on Warped Tour with that I don't remember.
That's fair. That's definitely fair.
But I do remember The Ghost Inside because those guys are incredible.
Yeah, yeah, I would absolutely agree, especially now that they did a comeback and they just sound stellar, even with everything they've been through. So
yeah,
good for them. Props to The Ghost Inside. I just thought of a Less Than Jake, The Ghosts of You and Me. Less Than Jake reference. Okay,
it's too many ghosts.
I know, I know. We're going to stop talking about ghosts. Who knows if they're even real? I don't want to find out. Anyway, I think basically the venues that you will want to target are probably small clubs because, you know, Matt, as you said, those are the most put together shows, the most organized, most professional. But it's not always realistic to book small clubs because they might be too big for you. A small club can be like 200 to 300 or maybe even 500 people. And so if your draw is 50 people, you're going to be more or less stuck with bars and coffee houses unless there's a very small club or like a black box theater, which is kind of a tiny club. It really depends. But I think you had a little bit more you wanted to say about the coffee house, right?
Yeah. And actually, there's a couple anecdotes I wanted to add. Starting with the small clubs, you know, a lot of the time, if you don't have a pull in another city, it, you know, you going and booking your own small club show is not going to be very productive. And so a lot of the time you want to reach out to promoters or talent buyers or venues and see if you can actually get onto a show that already exists. Preferably, you know, one that has a local on it that is headlining that happens to have a good pull. And you can figure these things out by looking at the locals in your area or looking at the locals in the cities that you're traveling and talking with them. You know, don't be afraid to reach out to the bands that do really well in their hometown. Those are the exact type of bands that you want to be playing with because, you know, hopefully you have some sort of mutual fan base. Yes, but coffee houses have a hidden power, like I mentioned earlier, in that they are open all day. So you actually, you know, unlike a bar, unlike a small club, you know, and like a house show, which you will only be playing shows at nighttime, you actually have the ability to come to a coffee house and make money during the day. This is powerful for two reasons. Not only can you fill up some of the random days off that you have in your tour schedule, but also even on days when you don't have a day off, you can go and play an acoustic set inside of a coffee house. This is an extra opportunity for you to set up a couple t-shirts, some CDs, and play some of your music acoustically. You don't even need to have a PA. You don't need to have anything other than your guitar and your voice. And even if you want to have a couple of those things, there's a couple really inexpensive options to let you do that. Not only does it give you an opportunity to sell your merch and your music to more people, but also it gives you an opportunity to promote the show that you're going to play that evening. And so, like, you might have somebody in passing when you're playing in this coffee house that buys your CD. You know, for us on our CD release show, we did an acoustic set beforehand, and then we went across the street to like and did a meet and greet at a restaurant kitty corner from the venue. That ended up being a wonderful experience because we made just as much money from the meet and greet and from the acoustic set that we did from the show. And it was incredible because we really got a chance to meet like some of our fans, interact with these people and like get to know who they were. You know, it wasn't just like, we got to make money from them. It was just a much more intimate setting. And so, you know, the power of the pre-show, if you will, is really awesome and incredibly beneficial in your career. And the coffee house makes that readily available to you.
Yeah, agreed. That's a really kind of low-hanging fruit way to get more shows without having a longer tour. And if you can fit those in, yeah, it's a lot more work to play two shows in a day than it is to play one show in a day, but it can be so rewarding. And one venue category that I realized we didn't put in here would be teen centers, but I would classify most of those either as a house show or a small club. Because some teen centers are really put together and have sound and lights and all that kind of stuff, and they have an actual performance space. So that's going to be more similar to a small club, even though obviously as a teen center, there's not going to be a bar in the club or anything like that. Or it could be a teen center that just has shows once in a while, and that's going to run essentially like a house show where like whoever's in charge of booking activities for the kids will reach out and say, hey, we want to have you come play our teen center next time you come through town. And there, in that case, it's probably going to be, you know, like one person doing everything, just like a house show, except that this person might be getting paid or they're a nonprofit volunteer who just wants to help kids, that kind of stuff. But either way, teen centers could fall into either one of those categories. You might have heard of 924 Gilman or 242 Main. Those are two legendary teen centers in the U.S. Unfortunately, 242 is no more, but 924 in Berkeley, California is still growing strong. And so if you're ever out in that area, you can definitely hit up 924 and try to get booked. as long as you're not on a major label, which most of you listening to this probably aren't.
Yeah, absolutely. No, those are all really, really good points too. And, you know, and there's like, it's going to be up to you while you're on the road to, you know, to orchestrate what you're going to do and, you know, what things are going to be really beneficial for you. I love the coffee house. We used to play with No Bragging Rights quite a lot. And that's something they would do. They would go and play Hot Topics, which, you know, that's something we've done before, play Hot Topic in the afternoon, go and play a show that evening. It's, you know, another way that you can, A, just really piggyback on your momentum. You're staying practiced, which is really nice. Like in my experience, every time we played a coffee house show during the day, that show in the evening went way better. So there's a lot of, it's not just about the money. It's not just about the fans, but it's also just about like that constant momentum of you're out there, you're on the road, you're creating art and you're performing. And so like the more momentum you have, the better it gets.
Absolutely. And so let's pivot here a little bit and talk about the staff that anybody could run into at a show. And in general, each one of these roles is going to be filled by someone. There could be a different person for each of these roles, or it could be one person doing everything. That really depends on how the venue operates. But you'll find that the more legitimate the venue is, the more professional the venue is, these roles are going to be split up. Because the more professional venues, each role has to spend more time doing what they do because they're more organized and put together. So to start things off, every single venue is going to have a talent buyer who is responsible for booking the shows and just keeping the venue's calendar clean and making sure that there's no double bookings and all that kind of stuff. Everybody here is familiar with the title of promoter. A talent buyer and a promoter are essentially the same thing. The difference being that a talent buyer works in-house directly for the venue, while a promoter is an outside third party that is renting the venue to put on their show. The next person that we have on our list is the production manager. And this is where a lot of my experience comes from, is from the production management side of things. And the production manager is going to be your main point of contact once the show is booked, because they are the expert on the sound and lighting systems at the venue, and they'll be the person doing the advance with you. Even if the production manager for a venue is surprised that you want to do an advance, you should always do an advance with them. We talked about this back on episode 13. Pre-show communication could save your show and your life. That shows just how important it is to advance every single show so you know that everyone is on the same page. It is common courtesy to do this, and yeah, some production managers at smaller venues might be surprised by it, but you should still do it because it is worth it and it only takes like 10 or 15 minutes. Do this for every single show. The production manager will also frequently double up as the stage manager at smaller venues, and they can also end up being the sound guy, lighting girl, whatever it is. They will be doing multiple roles in the production department at these smaller venues. The stage manager is somebody who is in charge of making sure everyone gets on and off stage on time and is basically running the show smoothly.
Yeah, stage managers are without a doubt, by nature of their job, the biggest assholes in the entire music industry.
It is absolutely true, but I gotta say they have very good reason to be that way.
Absolutely they do.
And it's because bands have screwed them over. They learn from their mistakes. Years ago, I was running sound for a show and I was also the production manager. It was a local benefit show with like 75 people there. So not tiny, but not huge. This one band was like, hey, like, you know, we have 2 minutes left. Can we do one more song? And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. You can do one more. Just, you know, keep it short. Well, they proceeded to cover all three parts of Another Brick in the Wall, which is like 8 minutes. And I was livid. And since then, I have always cut bands off if they go over time. The standard operation here as sound guy, or if the stage manager and sound person are separate, the stage manager will tell the sound person what to do. First, you get a warning. Hey, your time's up. Time to stop. Then after another minute, the monitors go out, so you can't hear what you're playing anymore. And then after that, the PA gets shut off entirely. Don't go over your set time, people, because unless your stage manager has never been screwed over by a band, which is very unlikely, because this is like the third show I was stage managing, they will cut you off. They will not be afraid to do what they have to do to get you off stage on time. If that means cutting the sound and making you look like an idiot on stage, they are not afraid to do that.
And when you get to a larger level of the game as well, neither are tour managers. The tour manager will walk up to the sound person if you're over your time and tell them to cut you off.
Yeah.
When you're playing at the professional level, it's a zero tolerance thing. Like, people will come up and tell you if you went 1 minute over your set time. And that is a very real deal. So, you know, you need to make sure that your set is locked in. You should know start to finish how long your set is.
Absolutely. And to be clear, this is not your tour manager. Your tour manager, she's not going to screw you over like that. This will be the headliner's tour manager who is telling the sound person to get you off that stage. You do not want to mess with the headliner's tour manager or anyone working at the venue because they could blacklist you from playing that venue again. That's just not a good situation to be in. It's actually, fun fact, I saw a certain band on Warped Tour 2016 get cut off as the last act of the night on their stage. It was not the main stage, but the next level down. They got kicked off the stage, and it was interesting to watch. And one of my favorite bands, actually, who I'm not going to name them, but they were on this podcast a while back.
Ouch.
Yeah. So that was fun to see. That was after seeing Sum 41 the same night. It was a good night.
I bet that was a grand old night.
Oh, yes. Yes, it was.
Well, there's a few more people that you're probably going to end up working with at a venue, depending on the size. We have operations managers, which, you know, they're going to be like the people at the box office. These are sometimes you'll interact with them and they'll be saying, you know, how many tickets were sold. Most of the time, the operations manager will be giving that information to the production manager, and you'll be settling up with the production manager at the end of the night. So sometimes this person will just not even exist in your, you know, in your life. Sometimes the operation manager is also like a promoter. They also double as this. So maybe you are interacting with them. You just don't realize that the operations manager is also the person overseeing, you know, tickets at the door or whatever. You know, they might be bouncing around. There's also a marketing manager. You know, these are people who are tasked with promoting all the events at the venue. They're going to be the guys changing the sign on the marquee. You know, they're going to be the ones printing off flyers and things like that. That doesn't necessarily absolve you from your job of doing that as well in your local markets. And a lot of the time when you're dealing with a smaller venue, they might not even have somebody in-house for marketing. So, you know, if you're doing coffee houses, like, their marketing people are working on coffee stuff, not on your acoustic program. It's still up to you. You know, a lot of the time bands have utilized street teams, which is developing groups of close fans in individual markets that they would have go out. And they would actually do the marketing and they would print off flyers and things like that. So there's been a lot of different tools utilized in the industry for years when it comes to this marketing purpose. But a larger venue, you will have a marketing manager. You probably won't really deal with them. Maybe you'll meet them. But again, it's mostly going to be the production manager. You also have the general manager. This is going to be whoever is in charge. You know, this might be like a general manager of the entire club, who everybody works under him. It might be, you know, just the guy who owns the venue or whatever. Anyway, if he's the general manager, make sure you're nice to him. He can very easily kick you out of his club. No problem.
Yes, absolutely. And speaking of street teams, Matt, let me just jump in real quick. We had an episode all about street teams. It was number 27, harnessing the power of your fan base to get new fans by hiring your current fans. And if you don't have a street team, I can honestly say I highly recommend it. No matter what level you're at, it is worth looking into it and just getting that ball rolling. So sorry to interrupt, Matt. Please continue.
No, you're wonderful. I was actually just going to turn it back over to you. There's kind of an order of operations that you're going to interact with these people. And so, you know, James, why don't you go ahead and let people know kind of what that would look like?
Yeah, absolutely. Typically, before you book the show, you're going to be working with the talent buyer or promoter if it's an outside third party. A lot of times clubs will have some shows booked in-house and others booked by a third party. Bars, to an extent, operate the same way, but coffee houses will almost always be in-house because their main priority is coffee. They're not talking about shows all the time. So if they have a music program, it'll be, you know, either the owner or just somebody who really likes music, who's also one of the baristas there. He or she will be booking the shows that they have in that venue. And for, well, a house show, there's only going to be one person running things in most cases. So you talk to whoever you talk to, and that's it. once the show is booked, you're going to be talking to the production manager mainly, and then maybe the marketing manager to send them some digital assets so they can put it up on their website or something like that. But for the main part, you're going to be talking to the production manager. Then day of show, you're going to be talking to the production manager and you're going to be working with them closely, or their representative. If that's a sound girl or somebody else, that's fine. They will be representing the production manager if the production manager isn't on site that day. You'll also be talking to the talent buyer or promoter or whoever is in charge of settling the show. Like you mentioned, Matt, that can also be the production manager. It really depends on how the venue runs. You might also talk to the operations manager at some point. You know, they might have meal tickets for you. They might be talking to you about parking, that kind of stuff. Although parking really would be the production manager's area of expertise in most cases as well. And a quick way to differentiate the two is a production manager deals with all the behind the scenes stuff, you know, the sound, the lighting, the production, and works with the artist. While the operations manager is in charge of all that same stuff, but facing the public. So they're doing the behind the scenes stuff for the public, whether it's security, whether it's making sure that the bars are properly stocked, all that kind of stuff is on the operations manager. They're in charge of running the venue effectively. The basic venue rules and departments are really vital to know, because that way, if you have a question, you know who you need to ask. So now, having heard this episode, you can say, oh, well, I need to know what kind of soundboard they have or how many inputs they have. Okay, let me ask the production manager. She'll know what to do. Oh, let me check on the box office sales. Okay, so box office, that's going to be either the talent buyer or the operations manager. Now, probably it's going to be the talent buyer because they're your point of contact and they'll get that information from the operations manager, but it could still go either way depending on what they decide. A lot of venues will have fairly standardized roles, but there's still a little play on fringe areas where it's like, okay, do I ask this person or this person? The main thing is, if you know the basic roles at each venue, you're going to have a much better idea of who to go to with questions. It just makes it so much easier, rather than saying, hey, who do I have to talk to for this? You just say, hey, who's your marketing manager? I have a marketing question. Who is your production manager? I have an audio question. Who's, you know, I mean, obviously you're going to know who the talent buyer is because you've been working with them, but who do I settle with? The talent buyer or the promoter or the production manager? All of these are questions that could reasonably come up, and they're just some examples of what could happen, but we hope that it helps you understand who is in charge of what at a venue. Keeping in mind, of course, like we've said, the smaller venues, these roles could be combined into one person, and that person might not even have an official title. They might literally just be a bartender who likes music. So you're going to have to figure that out and make sure you're talking to the correct person. One example, this was a small club show. The night of show, the point of contact was one of the head security people. Really nice guy, super helpful. And he was running the show. There was no production manager. The talent buyer wasn't there, but the security guy was in charge. And that's because he had the most experience at that venue. It has two rooms, Higher Ground up in Burlington, Vermont. And this was a show in the smaller room. So they didn't need the full staff. I think there were like two bartenders, a sound guy, and then three or four security people. So since he was the most experienced one, he was in charge of handling the payouts, the merch splits, all that kind of stuff. And there was no production manager on site. There was no marketing person on site. There was no talent buyer promoter on site. But they trusted the security guy, because he'd been there for years, to say, okay, hey, you handle the payouts for the bands. And he did a great job. That's just one example of how things can change at smaller venues. And that's a room that holds like 300 people. So it's not tiny by any means. But this also wasn't a sold-out show. There were maybe like 150 people there. For a larger show, it might have been a little more elaborate. Point being, things change, and you have to expect that these roles are going to be filled by these people unless somebody is doubling up on roles. And then you have to figure out who is taking care of each role, especially at the smaller venues like coffee houses, bars, and house shows. You're probably going to be talking to only one person or maybe two. that does it for another episode of the Bandhive Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope that this episode helped you learn a little bit about the types of venues you might want to play and who you could run into when you are playing those venues. I know it's a tough time for venues and artists everywhere since we're still not back playing shows yet. But if you go check out episode 61 of the Bandhive Podcast, which you can find at bandhive.rocks/61, or by going to better.band/listen and finding it in your favorite podcast app, you can hear all about why now is the time to start planning your tours. It may seem early, and I'm not saying you should go book shows. I think it's way too early for that, at least on the DIY level. You know, major acts will book a year and a half out, but for DIY, you're looking at maybe 3 to 6 months tops. So don't go booking shows yet, but you do want to make sure that you have a plan in place. Thanks again for listening. We will be back with another new episode next Tuesday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time. Until then, have an awesome week, stay safe, and of course, as always, keep rocking. Hey you, yeah you, with the headphones or the speakers. You've made it to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for listening. While I still have you here, if you're not already in the Bandhive Facebook community, it would be great to see you there. We have over 600 like-minded musicians who are asking questions, sharing their experiences and advice, and much more. So if you want to improve your band's business, look no further than the Bandhive Facebook community. You can find it by searching for Bandhive on Facebook, that's B-A-N-D-H-I-V-E, or going to bandhive.rocks/group. Again, that's bandhive.rocks/group, and that will automatically redirect you to our Facebook community. I look forward to seeing you there soon.